Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. In 2007, Dr. Andrew Owusu, who is an assistant professor of health and human performance here, released the initial findings from a study of health habits and health risk behaviors of adolescents in his native Ghana. The study began in summer of 2006 in partnership with the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control. And the subjects were youth, more than 6,200 youth, ranging from 12 to 16 in age. And there were several categories that they took into consideration and examined with regard to the lifestyles of these youth, including pregnancy, unintended pregnancy, nutrition, violence, dietary behaviors, unintentional injury, and so forth. The second set of statistics, the follow-up set, is been released now, or has been totally compiled and collated. And Andrew's back with us to talk about the second set of statistics and how the lives of these young people have changed, at least according to their own indications, from when they were first interviewed. Andrew, thanks for being back with us again.
Well, thank you, Gina. And just to make a quick correction, actually, second round was looking at the older adolescents. The first round we looked at the younger adolescents. 13 through 15 primarily was a focus, and this time we're looking at 16 through 19-year-olds.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not comparing the same set of youngsters. We're comparing a different group of youngsters.
We're comparing a different group, yeah.
Now, we have results from the senior high school students, what they told you about alcohol and drug use, sexual behaviors, unintended injuries and violence, hygiene, dietary behaviors, physical activity, tobacco use, mental health, various categories. And the statistics for the younger kids differ considerably from the statistics that you got for the older kids. Just some of the results from the first initial set of statistics, you found that 13.7% of the students had not cleaned or brushed their teeth in the past 30 days. 9.1% said they never or rarely washed their hands in the past 30 days. 12.4% said they never or rarely washed their hands after using the toilet in the past 30 days, and so on. How does that compare to what you found with the older youth?
The older youth on some of these different categories seem to be faring much better with regards to the behaviors. But on going back to the issue of brushing your teeth, which there also needs to be a slight correction, the question has to do with whether they brush your teeth one or more times per day in the past 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way the question is phrased, if a kid on a particular day forgets to brush his or her teeth, she falls into the latter category. So we're comparing those who brush their teeth every day versus those who may miss a day in the past 30 days, which obviously makes the numbers look very different compared to, well, past 30 days you haven't brushed your teeth.
Okay.
So that looks, yeah. But having said that, though, you can see that the same question, the results for the young adolescents is much better, where the number for that particular hygiene question is much lower, 3.1%.
Does this have to do with wanting to be attractive to members of the opposite sex once you get up into those higher teenage years and being more cognizant of things like that in order to make sure you don't gross out someone you're trying to date?
Probably. And also the younger adolescents, which referred to as junior high school or in Ghana junior secondary school, includes those who have just made a transition from elementary school or from primary school now in secondary school, where parents no longer tell, have you brushed your teeth? Make sure you brush your teeth in the morning. And
plus you've got a whole new set of teeth to brush.
Yeah. So we definitely think that with regards to hygiene issues, the younger group has more of a problem, and that's part of the reason why Ghana did launch a huge initiative with UNICEF and DANIDA, the Danish Foundation for Foreign Assistance, on hygiene. And in fact, the results from the younger group, which I don't believe I've shared this with you, where we looked at four of the 10 regions in Ghana where this program was instituted, and their hygiene behaviors with regards to positive behaviors were much, much higher compared to the other regions. So for us, the data also served as an evaluation of this project. And obviously, based on the numbers we are seeing, this is something that needs to go nationwide.
Did you collect any socioeconomic data so that you could determine the habits, health habits of these youngsters in, say, industrialized areas by comparison to more rural areas, for example?
Yeah, we do have some socioeconomic data. And in fact, although we didn't have that kind of data for the young adolescents, the junior high schools, the senior high school questionnaire was slightly different. So what we did was we actually brought in some additional faculty members at MTSU from, for example, the sociology department, Professor May, who contributed or helped us draft and come up with socioeconomic indicators that would help further explain or at least help us understand what was going on when we take into account socioeconomic indicators and how they might also affect behavior or contribute to behavior. Unfortunately, the fact sheet that I gave you does not have those socioeconomic indicators yet. But as you can see, what we have now with regards to the fact sheets are very basic descriptive statistics. So looking at the question and then looking at the breakdown for the question, as opposed to trying to determine any associations or even things that predict certain behaviors.
As long as we're on the subject of hygiene, let me veer off of the statistics and ask you about something anecdotal that I read the other day, just for my own information. I read that in certain parts of Africa, teenaged girls who are having their menstrual cycle are kept home from school for the length of the menstrual period because they don't have access to tampons and napkins. And so they miss about a week of school every month for no reason other than that they, of course, do not want to go to school and soil themselves in public and be embarrassed in front of their peers. Do you know about this, and how widespread is this?
Yes, I am actually aware of that. And no, I don't know how widespread it is, for example, in Ghana. But one of the things that I know that Ghana Education Service, through the School Health Education Programs Unit, has been doing is in terms of promoting sanitation, including and encompassing menstruation. Because you are right, if girls are skipping school because of menstruation, then yeah, we have a deficit with regards to learning because they're not going to school. And so that's something that is being tackled with regards to making available sanitary pads. And also even in terms of the bathrooms that are constructed in different areas, different schools, they now, when they talk about toilets, for example, say stuff such as girl-friendly toilets, which means, you know, in terms of construction of some of these toilets and latrines in certain areas, especially in rural areas, is to make sure that also it caters to the needs of the female student population.
To the female anatomy, as opposed to having bathrooms with nothing but urinals in them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's go on to sexual behaviors. And some of the statistics we have here, the percentage of students whose main reason for not having sexual intercourse is they want to wait until they are married, 41.1% for boys and 57.2% for girls. Among students who had sexual intercourse during the last 12 months, the percentage who used a condom the last time they had intercourse, 51.8% boys, 54.7% girls. Those seem to me, just as a non-professional layperson, seem to be relatively high numbers that would be encouraging. How did they strike you?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. And just going back just a little bit, the beauty of us having the system, the surveillance system in place in Ghana, obviously through the help or initiative of MTSU and our partners, is this is the first time in Ghana that we are actually looking at these numbers.
It is precedent-setting. You have nothing to compare it to.
Nothing to compare it to at the national level. Now, having said that, if we go back to the numbers, let's take, for example, those who said they want to wait until marriage. Well, 41% boys, 57.2% girls. I could easily turn that around for the girls. Let's say 50, 7%. Let's make it 60%. Round it off to 60%. But it still means 40% are planning not to wait. Or at least not using marriage as a reason for waiting. If we look at condom use also, you can see, at least for guys, that of those who are sexually active, half of them did not use a condom during their last sexual intercourse. So from a public health point of view, that is a problem.
But they strike me as somewhat higher numbers than American numbers among American youth, I think. And perhaps it would be bad science or comparing apples and oranges to compare it to an industrialized nation. But, you know, American youth are not that circumspect when it comes to these sorts of matters either, despite the fact that there is a wealth of information available about these things, even when their parents choose not to educate themselves in the home.
Yeah, and again, the more we do this in terms of looking at adolescents and collecting data, there are certain things that, irrespective of where they come from, often ends up being a problem. Because adolescence is a period in life where people are formulating or entrenching new behaviors, finding out new things, making new friends, getting into behaviors that may last a lifetime, etc. And so they all across the board struggle with some of these things. But with the GSHS in place and the fact that GSHS is part of, and if I may explain how this fits into the global health scenario, the GSHS is part of WHO's program, a program called the Stepwise Approach to Surveillance. And the idea of the Stepwise Approach to Surveillance is to have a simple standardized way of collecting, analyzing, and disseminating data. And the protocol procedures and some of the questions that are used in assessing behaviors or things that are deemed important to public health are similar across countries. So now we can actually compare. So, for example, I was the other day, I'm working on an article looking at bullying in Ghana and whether parents affect that in any way. And what I was able to do now is to look at the bullying rates for the different countries across the board. Now, comparing this to the U.S., the YRBS, which is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, a similar instrument. In fact, the GSHS is based off the YRBS, which is CDC's initiative. And this is where CDC's expertise comes in. That's how CDC is part of this program, would allow us to compare some of these behaviors. For example, as it relates to sex and condom use, I haven't done that yet, but I presume in the next few weeks and months, we will be able to give you some numbers looking at comparing some of these behaviors.
Okay, we'll get into the next stage of the process and see where that goes. First, we'll stick to the second stage of statistics. First, the unintentional injuries and violence. 49.4% among the boys, 43.4% among the girls say that they were seriously injured one or more times during the past 12 months. Now, that's alarming to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost incomprehensible. The percentage of students who were bullied on one or more days during the past 30 days, 41.2% of the boys, 38.8% of the girls. And this is not taking into consideration the margins of error, which we won't get into because just as any poll or any survey does, there is a certain plus or minus margin of error. How did you define bullying for purposes of that question about bullying?
Well, there were a number of ways we defined it. And so they had, I believe, maybe five or six answer options, with the first one being, I was not bullied. And then there's, was made fun of, was insulted by somebody else, was pushed by somebody, was shoved by somebody, or attacked by somebody. And when we talk about bullying, one of the things we did explain to the students prior to them answering those that particular set of questions was where there's an imbalance in power. But yes, you are right. These numbers are very high. And as I said, I'm actually working on an article looking at bullying in Ghana. And again, the beauty of having this is for the first time, we know what the rates look like, and this has always been an issue. Now, back to unintentional injuries.
Yeah.
And percentage of students who were seriously injured one or more times during the past 12 months. The number one reason for deaths amongst this age group, including the U.S., is violence and unintentional injuries.
Now, with regard to Ghana, what accounts for that? With regard to the intentional part of the injury, the violence, is it gang activity? Is it just stray fights in the schoolyard? What is it?
No. And in this case, we are looking specifically at unintentional injuries.
Okay.
So this doesn't include, so we're looking
but
at...
But with regard to the violence, but you said violence was the number one.
With regards to violence, in Ghana, though, we do not have a gang problem. Mm-hmm. I believe there's also another question about when they were in a physical fight.
Mm-hmm.
So fights at school or off campus or out of school. But no, we don't have a gang problem, not anywhere near what you think of. Maybe mm-hmm. our idea of gangs might even be laughable.
Yeah. We expect the boys to be a little bit pugnacious because the testosterone is beginning to flow in the teenage years. But it looks like even a pretty fair percentage of the girls were involved in some kind of physical fight. Mm-hmm. Percentage of students in a physical fight one or more times during the past 12 months, 24.5% among the girls.
Yeah, and that's one in four saying in the past. And also, you need to look at duration. It's a whole year. In the past year, one out of four girls that say that they were in a physical fight, and for the guys, it's slightly more than one in four, almost one in three. Again, going back to this being standardized, it allows me, because when I look at these numbers right now, I say, okay, this is what it looks like. This is what we have. But I have to put it into context, and this is
right.
Where the comparison, being able to compare and then also review literature on school violence, especially amongst this age group, to get an idea of are we way above the curve, or is this what can be expected? And even if it is expected, these numbers still seem high.
So what putting it into context is still an ongoing process, simply because this is the first of its kind, right?
It is the first of its kind, and we have so much data right now. Part of my fear is actually that we may not be able to get through this data as quickly as we need to get it out. However, the fact sheets and the basic descriptive statistics, such as what you were reading from, we need to disseminate to all pertinent stakeholders in Ghana. So this includes the schools themselves, includes Ghana Education Service. It also includes policymakers, such that, you know, when revamping the curriculum or developing new material, they can take some of these things into account. So now the next step is not only further analysis of trying to better understand some of these behaviors, but also dissemination. Because at the end of the day, yes, we have this information. It's great. It's new stuff. But if we don't get it out there to those who really can use this and need to see this data, then we haven't completed our work.
But you do have to determine context before you can put it into context, before you disseminate it to all of the stakeholders, or do you want to get the raw data to the stakeholders and invite them to be participants in the assessment of what kind of context we need to put this in?
Well, not the raw data. And this, the fact sheets are actually analysis or results from the data in terms of after we've analyzed the data. What I mean by it's not as in-depth is the fact that we are just looking at differences between groups for specific questions. And also what the fact sheets do not convey is the fact that we also have fact sheets, or at least the version you're looking at, that also looks at grade level.
Mm-hmm.
These different behaviors and numbers we've seen by grade level. And on some of them you can see a stark difference in between groups. For example, let's take a look at malaria.
Okay.
Now, which obviously is a big problem in Ghana.
And a highly aberrational category. One wouldn't find it on a United States
yes.
survey of this ilk.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at... Oh, let me scroll down here. Okay, here we go. Now, the number of students... Okay, percentage of students who during the last school term were told one or more times by a doctor or nurse that they were sick with malaria. So we are actually making sure that it's not self-diagnosis, but they right. were told by a doctor or nurse that you have malaria.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the percentages, you can see that girls are more likely to report having had malaria than mm-hmm. boys. And it looks like a pretty significant number, by almost 10 percentage points. And this is something I didn't know.
Is there some gender-specific aspect to this that this data tells you with regard to boys and girls?
Well, so far, what it seems to indicate is the fact that girls are more likely to report or at least have malaria than the boys.
Now why
obviously,
would that
malaria
be?
Is not my area of
yeah.
of expertise, but what it tells me is, okay, we need to get this out to our malaria people to see if is this expected,
mm-hmm.
and if it's not expected, then what does it mean? But we also have some additional questions on there, which maybe after further analysis we might be able to figure out the extent to which whether there are other easily explainable reasons why girls may fall more sick than the boys. For example, there's issue of bed net use, whether they use mosquito nets at schools, at home or in the boarding school, which most of these were boarding schools. Also, whether the nets, if they do use bed nets, whether they were treated, bed nets are treated with insecticides, which also makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then the room in which they sleep, whether it's in the dormitory or at home, does it have mosquito netting? And what we, I don't know, but one of these things may show that, well, maybe for the girls, maybe bed net use was not as high as for the boys. And then one may reasonably say, well, maybe bed net is a contributing factor because the girls use it less. But we don't know. We're going to have to look at this and pass this information on to our malaria experts to help us figure out, you know, why are we seeing this discrepancy in reporting.
So you're talking about a discrepancy with regard to social behavior as opposed to a biological distinction about girls necessarily being more susceptible to the disease than boys are. You're talking about behaviors.
We're talking about, well, in this case, in obviously in reporting whether you had malaria or not, it's not a behavior, but mm-hmm. choosing to use a bed net or
right.
not is... We can think of that as a behavior.
With regard to all of these categories, there are some areas in which the adolescents themselves have a certain amount of control. Obviously, to take drugs or not is a choice. You make a decision in that regard. There are some areas in which the kids don't necessarily have total control. For example, being bullied, especially if one is at a physical disadvantage. It causes one to say, where are the parents? Where are the teachers? This has got to be something that you're especially anxious to get to the stakeholders in this area, parents and teachers, so that they can examine their particular discipline systems and say, you know, wait a minute, if the kids are saying this, we're missing something here. Either that or we don't have good systems in place for disciplining the people who are guilty of bullying, for example.
And it's kind of interesting that you bring bullying up. I did mention that earlier, but one of our graduate students from last year, her master's thesis, she did actually look at bullying amongst junior high school students in Ghana. Her name was Alicia Hoeg. And the article that I'm writing is kind of a follow-up to the work which she did. And trying to understand bullying, first of all, is a worldwide phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Our numbers in Ghana compared to other African countries seems quite high when we look at the junior high school students and even for the senior high school students. And so there's also the issue of trying to figure out what are some of the determinants of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the kid may not be able to do anything about it, but there are some other protective factors which we know when in place can help a kid deal with bullying or reduce the level of bullying. So we look at some of these protective factors. And one of the things she was looking at specifically was the issue of parents. Do kids who perceive that their parents understand their problems and worries, are they less likely to be bullied?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that she was interested in, and we looked at. And what we found was that if a kid said, my parents always understand my problem and worries. There was they were less likely to be bullied.
Mm-hmm.
Those who said they were sometimes, their parents sometimes, or never understood their problems or worries, were actually more likely to be bullied.
If you've got a kid who says, my parents always understand my problems or worries, you've got a very unique kid. I don't care whether they're in Ghana, the United States, or anyplace else, especially during the teenage years.
Yes, and in fact, we were looking at the junior high school students where during that age, parents are still important. But when we get to the high school level, parents probably will be less important to the high school age. But looking at that younger subset, it was still interesting to be able to point out that, look, when a kid believes or at least perceives that a parent always understands their problem and worries, we can use that as a proxy for communication
mm-hmm.
between parent and child,
yeah.
which may help them. Maybe the parents may help them deal with their bullying issues and if there are things going on. Now, another thing that was interesting, which we still don't know why, is, well, we can speculate, is kids who said that they were taught in school how to avoid bullying. So we are still looking at those who say, my parents always understand my problems. And then we throw in the question, okay, were you taught in school how to avoid bullying?
Right.
Those who said, yes, they were taught in school how to avoid bullying, were more likely to be bullied than those who said no.
Uh-huh.
So that was something that was interesting.
Yeah.
What we think may be the reason why is because those who said, yes, they were taught in school may be more familiar with bullying, the different forms of bullying, etc., and so are more likely to report
mm-hmm.
being bullied. And so that may explain that. We're not sure yet, but we think that's why those numbers seem
mm-hmm.
Off.
Yeah. Here's something that, as a three-time Olympian, must be especially disappointing to you. The percentage of students who were physically active for a total of at least 60 minutes per day on all 7 days during the past 7 days, 21.2% for the boys, 15.6% for the girls. Apparently these youngsters need some exercise.
They definitely do. And that's an hour per day on all 7 days. And I think, yes, some of them may be active Monday through Friday, but maybe on weekends they're not really doing anything. But again, bringing in additional faculty to help us better understand some of these things in Ghana. Dr. Mark Ivey in our Recreation and Leisure division, same department as I am, also worked on this with us. And what he was interested in was looking at non-sport physical activity amongst this population. Because sometimes when we talk about physical activity, we seem to think more about just sports, etc. But non-sport physical activity, engagement and enjoyment in those activities, I believe, are more, a person who does that is more likely to also continue with a lifetime of physical activity.
Now, how do you gauge that? Does that include walking, housework?
Walking. And in this case, we're looking more for recreational, but it's not sports.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are walking, hiking,
mm-hmm.
Well, if you went mountain climbing or biking, that kind of stuff, but it's not for sports.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not competitive.
Where do you go from here now that you've completed the second phase or collected all the data from the second phase? What happens next in the process?
As I said, dissemination. And the first thing is getting these fact sheets put together. WHO did indicate last year in July when I was in Thailand for a GSHS workshop that they would help us with the dissemination part of it. And the idea would be to hold a workshop in Ghana, bring in all the relevant stakeholders and present these results to them and perhaps get some feedback from them also as to how maybe we can improve on this, but to get a better idea of where we go from here. Now that they have these results, what does it mean to them? You know, how does it compare? And again, it can serve, all this data can serve also as evaluation for even ongoing projects.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them may have projects ongoing and may have data that we could possibly compare this to and say, wow, this is actually working, just like the hygiene one, you know? We might want to expand this. Or some may realize, oh, this is not working. We may need to think of a different approach. So dissemination is key. And not this year, but next year, we will be conducting the second round for the junior high schools, because then we'd have had a two-year period in between.
This is what they call a longitudinal study.
So we can, the whole idea of the system is to be able to monitor trends over time.
Andrew Owusu, professor of health and human performance, assistant professor, I believe, of health and human performance, and three-time Olympian in the triple jump. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. You can catch the podcast at mtsunews.com at your leisure, and we're available on iTunes.